From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
It is one of those days where I realize how spoiled I am. Jared, our engineer, out today, so I'm wearing two hats. I get to engineer and host the show, and hopefully the difference in quality is negligible. But the quality of content surely is there. We welcome Paul Gessing into studio from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, thanks for coming back.
Hey, good to be with you, Steve.
We didn't scare you off.
No, not yet.
Well, listen, not only does Paul provide all kinds of great information for us to consider as far as things happening in our state, and you can find that information in a couple different places, riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com, right, Paul?
That's correct.
Okay. Not only does he routinely do that, but now... You're giving us an opportunity to get out and meet together and check out some information from guests that you're bringing to an event. What can you tell us?
Yeah, the Rio Grande Foundation is hosting an event regarding New Mexico, well, specifically Albuquerque's homeless crisis. It's at Seasons Restaurant near Old Town on June the 14th. And we have a speaker named Judge Glock, who is a senior fellow at the Cicero Institute, which studies these and other issues. And anyone who lives or travels around the city of Albuquerque is probably aware of the serious homelessness challenges that we face. Other cities, predominantly blue cities across the country, are dealing with some of these issues as well. But it's something that really, I think, impacts quality of life and all residents of Albuquerque. So June 14th, check it out, riograndefoundation.org. You can find details and sign up there.
All right. And we'll mention that a few times through today's show to make sure people are aware of it and where to find the information. But we have lots to talk about today, Paul, and the top of the stack today, I notice, is a topic we've covered before, and I love the title to the blog you wrote, the word mind-blowing in there. Yeah, we keep throwing money at something that, you know, more of something that isn't working, I guess, isn't a solution, is it?
Yeah, Albuquerque Public Schools, and they're in the news just today, because the superintendent, Scott Elder, is leaving the district. He's leaving on his own terms. His contract's expiring. So they're going to have a leadership change. But the school board just passed a budget. And it's a mind-blowing budget in terms of just the size, the sheer size of how much money APS is going to be spending. $2.16 billion, billion with a B, and that's to educate now 68,902 students. Now, obviously, that number may or may not be exactly accurate, but the expected idea is that the district is shrinking yet again by a few thousand students, as it has shrunk dramatically in the last decade plus. It's all the way down to 68,902. So when we do our very innovative, very confusing analysis of the APS budget, we take the $2.16 billion and divide it by the number of students they are attempting to educate, and we get $31,349 per student. That is an insane amount of money. It's very, very significant increases in recent years.
Are they eating steak in the cafeteria?
No, but they should be. Oop.
Keep going. Go ahead.
They should be, and they should also, of course, be learning at a very high level in Albuquerque Public Schools. And really, we face some challenges, obviously, in getting student performance up. That's what I think the entire system should be focused on. But it's not, and that's not Scott Elder's fault necessarily. It's not the APS school board's fault. I definitely point more fingers at the legislature and the governor for their approach, but it is a government system funded by your tax dollars, and quite frankly, government monopolies using your tax dollars are not super efficient means of doing anything, and that includes educating our children. So there are systemic issues. Those can be overcome to an extent, but the fact is we are spending a lot of money here at Albuquerque Public Schools. A lot of that money happens to come from the oil and gas industry, which funds, you know, education, funds our entire state budget to a great extent, and that money heads to Santa Fe when it's then distributed out into school districts and other governments. And Albuquerque Public Schools spending a great deal of money.
Hey, Paul, any breakdown? Now, this is APS. And we know that as a state, we rank, 51st, right?
51st, 52nd, yeah.
Any idea are there other places in the state that aren't having some of the issues we have at APS?
Any places in the state? Yes, some states.
Where their scores are better.
Some schools have been credited with trying to allocate more of those dollars into the classroom. If I had to point a finger at APS directly, it would be that they overspend on buildings. They overspend on construction and capital costs. Some of that is, again, driven by state policies like our Davis-Bacon law, which increases labor costs. There's also a lack of interest or desire to engage in modular school building design, where you're not taking a totally new approach every time you build a school. But, you know, quite frankly, we're not building that many schools these days. We are refurbishing some, and that costs a lot of money and typically involves high cost LEED standards and other things. But what APS should be doing, what the Legislative Finance Committee, which looked at APS a year or so ago, said, is that they need to right-size their footprint. You have a district that used to have over 80,000, close to 90,000 students in it as recently as, 15 years ago, and they haven't been willing to close schools down that are now serving a fraction of the population that they once were. And that's a tough thing for private sector businesses, that they have a legacy enterprise that they're engaged in, and they need to shut it down. Well, that's tough when you're dealing with profits and losses, but with governments, you have political pressure. Families, parents don't want their neighborhood school to shut down and the kid to have to go to a different place. With the money flowing in, there's a, why do we need to do something like make a tough decision on this now kind of mentality. So there, it really boils down to politics and the lack of interest and willingness to take on very hard decisions. So there's a lot of work to be done that should be done in APS and quite frankly in our entire state education system. But not all of it's easy. Some of it could be done much more easily, like changing the way policies work at the state level. But again, that hasn't happened either.
Well, and you actually mentioned something that came to mind. I was going through this information earlier today. And, as we continue to look at the problems in education in New Mexico the thought occurred to me, it just feels like something that, as painful as it sounds, needs to be completely dismantled and rebuilt. What makes me go there again after thinking about earlier today was what you said about certain areas where things have changed in these neighborhoods. They haven't changed they haven't rolled with those changes. They're doing the same things in those neighborhoods that they did when the neighborhoods were much different.
Absolutely. And, you know, government is notorious for that kind of behavior. It's not the only entity in our society that is slow to change and doesn't like to make tough decisions. It's absolutely not. But it's one of the institutions in our society, and I'm referring to government, that really, because of politics, because of the serving of multiple masters, in the case of just APS, you have a school board, you have the unions, you have the state, the PED, you have the legislature, the governor, all of them having their own priorities and differences of opinion. You have parents who do have a seat at the table, but are by no means the only customers. And then you have employers and businesses that want to see a trained workforce. And, you know, I can think of some of those interest groups that I would like to see better served, more served, and some that, quite frankly, we could ignore a little bit more. But, you know, that's the way government works. And government does some things fairly well, but I'm pretty skeptical that government in charge of education, a monopoly, taxpayer financed, that is the best way to do things. I think other entities, other players could do a better job, but you know, old habits die hard.
Well, Paul, if you have more to say about the mind-blowing $2.16 billion put into that APS budget, by all means, continue in that. But I did want to go to a place it's kind of next on the stack, and it's related, in spite of the fact that we all know how terrible the stats are, what's coming out of the education system in New Mexico. There are those who would spin it as if things are improving.
Yeah, and the problem here is that New Mexico is embarking upon this effort to spend a lot more money on pre-K. And there was recently a study, so-called study, that was released by the National Institute for Early Education Research. They are an interest group related to pre-K and have a direct stake in expanding pre-K, preschool, which New Mexico is doing, providing universal taxpayer-financed preschool. And they came up with this, what's called a yearbook, where they look at the 50 states, and you know, you would think that they, if they're doing an honest analysis, they would say, well, state X, Y, and Z implemented preschool, and we saw these kinds of educational outcomes. Unfortunately, that is not what they did in this particular report. They focused much more on inputs. And, you know, it's one of the frustrations in my job. It's one of the challenges in my job is that it's easy to measure inputs and, you know, say, well, we're spending more money, we're allocating more teachers, we're allocating higher paid teachers, more prepared teachers, theoretically. But New Mexico has been involved in the pre-K preschool business for nearly 20 years now, since the 2005-2006 school year. And when you're educating or working with 3 and 4 year olds, you would think that we would have some pretty solid results by now in terms of following kids that started out in 05 or 06, or pick a year and see how their education outcomes have evolved over that intervening period. And we've talked, you and I have on this show, about our results and the challenges that this state faces. And if anything, there's absolutely no evidence that those pre-K dollars have moved the current needle, because New Mexico's fallen upon harder and harder times educationally in recent years. So it really is, I think, impossible to make the case. And this report doesn't actually try to do it. They just look at inputs. They don't look at, is this preparing our children for jobs in a free economy? Are we seeing more kids graduate high school from a, all things being equal perspective? Are more kids going to college, all things being equal? So some of those things, like graduation and college, tend to change. So we look at test scores, because they tend to, be able to be consistent across time. But that's what I think the analysis needs to be is, are we improving student outcomes or are we just investing, spending more money?
Well, yeah, and you know, the illustration that came to mind here for me was you have a theater and you have a cast of people to put on a production, and the production's poor because, what's being practiced in rehearsal, you know, you practice poorly, you perform poorly. And, okay, well, we're not having a good outcome with what ends up on stage. So let's build a shinier building. Mm-hmm. And that's, it seems like, from what I'm hearing from you, that's a lot of what's happening with APS, and I'm assuming other places around the state, that, you know, if you practice poorly, you're going to perform poorly, and putting money towards things that don't have, you know, don't produce a better product isn't something that we need to keep doing and doing and putting more and more money towards.
Yeah. It's kind of one of our constant frustrations with government at all levels. And of course we focus at the state and local government level. So we are frustrated that you don't get a lot of good analysis of what government does and how they spend the money. And I know some of these things are tough to study, but you know, just spending more money every year or into the future on whatever government is doing does not mean that you're getting better results and more outcomes. You're often not. Often that money is wasted or misallocated and just doesn't get the job done. So we'd like to see more analysis of what government does and more honest discussions about it. And quite frankly, we think that a lot more activities would then be pushed away from government into the private sector, because there would be widespread acknowledgement that it's just not effective to pour money into government programs.
All right. Well, if you just tuned in, we're in studio with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And the topic for the first segment has primarily been on New Mexico education again. And believe it or not, there's some good news we have to share today. We are going to get to it, but it's going to be after the break. And we'll get to it right after this on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right, we're in the middle of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, and we're covering a lot of the topics and content Paul covers in his blog, found at errorsofenchantment.com, and started the hour on education again. But before we continue on that topic, and we have some good news actually to share, stay with us, tease for that. We mentioned at the top of the hour an event, Paul, that's coming up relatively soon. This is June 14th falls on a
Wednesday.
A Wednesday, okay. There is a Wednesday event coming up on June 14th. Paul, what's that? And it's presented by the Rio Grande Foundation.
It is. It's, again, Albuquerque's homelessness crisis. We want to be sympathetic and caring for our fellow man, but we also want to make sure that resources are used efficiently and effectively to best address the problem. And that includes, you know, panhandling on the side of the road, camping in public spaces, etc. So our speaker is named Judge Glock. He is a senior fellow at the Cicero Institute, a think tank that works on solutions, among other things, to the homelessness challenge. The luncheon is at Seasons Rotisserie and Grill. That's in Old Town, Albuquerque, June 14th, next Wednesday. It starts at noon and ends at 1, but you want to get there by 11:45. You can find information on pricing available at riograndefoundation.org.
So, Paul, on the other side of this event, what do you hope to see accomplished?
Well, we are going to have a number of policymakers there. I wish the mayor was there, but I don't think so. We're also going to be doing some follow-up and research on these issues, because I don't think many, well, let's put it this way. The mayor has finally, I believe, caught on to the fact that pouring more resources into the housing component is the solution. That is really not the ultimate winning approach to addressing the homelessness challenge. You really need to focus on mental health, mental well-being. I believe long-term, you need a re-embrace of, spirit and Bible and God, those kinds of things, the family unit. All of those can help really solve this problem of homelessness, which is ultimately a hopelessness challenge. But in terms of public policy, we have to recognize that state and local governments aren't going to solve the problem. They are going to have to enforce the law, enforce private property rights, and make sure that public safety is top of mind, and that you treat these people with as much compassion as you can, but understand that some of them, quite frankly, there's no helping some folks if they are unwilling to be treated, unwilling to give up drugs and alcohol. So you have to make a lot of tough decisions. And this particular speaker has done a great job in various presentations I've seen and conversations I've had with him, explaining the data and explaining what's happening and why we're kind of facing this real challenge and what can be done about it.
All right. Well, if you want to find out more about this luncheon on June 14th at Seasons Rotisserie and Grill in Old Town, go to riograndefoundation.org on the web, and you'll find the information there. And as I mentioned, we started the show talking about education. Paul, here's a bright spot, a blog you recently wrote regarding legislation about the 529.
Exactly. We talk about education. Normally, it is not good news, but during the last legislative session, there was a bill passed that actually expanded something called 529 plans. Now, I'm not in charge of naming these things, but 529 happens to be the IRS code that they're set up under. Traditionally, these tax-advantaged accounts, which are individually owned, they have been set up for higher education, for college. But during the Trump administration, bills were passed in a couple of congressional years that actually expanded the reach of these so-called 529 plans to K-12. So you can use them for K-12 tuition. You can use them for students with disabilities who need special educational options, and you can even use them for internships and apprenticeships and other kind of outside the box educational options. So the legislation that passed in the session this year in New Mexico was bipartisan. It was sponsored by Representative Lane from Farmington, Republican Minority Leader Peter Wirth in the Senate, Democrat Senate Majority Leader, and it did not have a single no vote against it. And the idea was for New Mexico to comply with the federal law to allow it to be used, these 529s to be used for K-12 options. So now, if you want to send your kid to Calvary or send them to a private school or a parochial school, those accounts, tax advantaged, can be used for those purposes. And it's a really important move, I think, and a really important savings option for not just for parents. It could be for yourself if you want to go back to college, for example, or even I think a GED you could use, put money aside and say 5 years later, you're ready to go, or it could be your grandkid, your neighbor's kid, whatever, because these accounts can be shifted around, including to, say, a child wants to go into a vocational type of education that only requires high school. You don't use it for that high school diploma at all, and they go into being an electrician or something. Well, you can use that money for a Roth IRA retirement account. So you can start off that young person with a retirement account at a very young age that's going to really accumulate and save money for them. So they're really amazing accounts, and the 529 plan is worth checking out. So make sure you talk to your financial advisor. This is not a financial advice show. This is a public policy show, but I think anyone who is worth their salt will really speak highly of these 529 plans as an option for saving for education and potentially other uses down the road as well.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of different plans, but you mentioned in the blog the education plan, New Mexico state sponsored 529 educational savings plan, and our listeners may remember we had Carolyn Fittipaldi on this show, and I know you mentioned before the show we were talking off the air, you had her on a podcast, but if you do a search for Carolyn on abqconnect.online, you'll find information that we shared already regarding the state-sponsored 529 on the website at abqconnect.online. But yeah, a little bit of good news.
Just a quick note, that just because it's a state-sponsored plan doesn't mean that you don't own the account yourself, or that there's any kind of ulterior motive or hook there. They just administer the plans to make sure that they are set up correctly, that you don't have scammers out there, and that you use the money for the appropriate purposes. Yeah. And so
and I'm glad you mentioned checking with your financial advisor, because I think even the money that can be transferred into a Roth IRA, there's probably a lifetime cap on that. All those numbers, again, this isn't a financial show. Check with your financial advisor. But yeah, Paul, thanks for bringing, I love it when you bring good news.
Yeah, and it is very good news. It's something that showed that there is bipartisan support for what we consider long overdue education reforms and changes and options. It's a first step, it's a baby step, but we'll take the win when we can get it.
That's right, move in the right direction. Hey, we're already up against our next break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We're covering material found primarily from his blog at errorsofenchantment.com. But also, if you have to go, hopefully you can stick around. If you have to go, the show will be archived shortly at abqconnect.online, where you can find past shows. And coming up, we'll continue that conversation with Paul on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
All right, welcome into ABQ Connect. If you're just joining us, we're in the middle of a full hour today with the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul Gessing is in studio. And Paul, we head on to our next topic, a blog you wrote for Errors of Enchantment, a little bit of fact-checking with our governor.
Yeah, and one of the nice things about this recent summit that was held by Politico magazine, they're kind of a D.C.-oriented politics magazine, that they had an energy summit, and they put everything up on the internet, so I didn't have to be in the room to hear what the governor had to say, and some of the things she talked about, quite frankly, it would be hard for me to forgive her for saying these things, because she was just clearly speaking out of turn and making things up. And that's just a reality. One is she said that we're one of the only states that is moving people out of poverty. But time and again, we are rated as one of the most impoverished states in the country, and there's been no change over the last several years, and that's according to the Farmington Daily Times. She said, the governor did, we have the largest wind farm in North America right here in New Mexico, but that is not true at all, and you can find that on the internet and look it up. She vetoed, and this is what really got me down this rabbit hole to begin with, the governor vetoed some subsidies for electric vehicles and other so-called green energy projects. And that was as a result of this last legislative session. She took a lot of heat from her own political allies on that. We were actually in agreement with the governor on those vetoes, But she said they were too small. And that's not what the environmentalists and her allies are saying. It's very strange for her to say, well, I supported X, but I really only supported it if it was a bigger version of X. I don't really get that. But the biggest claim that she made and was right at the very end of the Politico Energy Summit, and we put this up at Heirs of Enchantment. You can see the video for yourself. The governor claimed that New Mexico is not an energy state. Now, I don't even begin to understand where she comes off saying that, because we're number two in oil production as a state. We're top 10 in natural gas. We're also big into the green, you know, sources of energy, wind and solar. Of course, we have two national labs, so we have energy in that regard. We have nuclear storage facilities in southeastern part of New Mexico, and they're trying to do more of that. It is truly baffling for anyone to say we're not an energy state, but that is what Michelle Lujan Grisham, our governor, was saying. And there's other points that she made that I took issue with. You just have to go and check it out yourself at heirsofenchantment.com.
All right. And Paul, it's okay to say, I'm not going to speculate, but would you speculate on why she went this the direction on some of these comments?
I honestly have no idea. And this is in line with several of her recent decisions, the vetoes themselves. Like I said, she's been criticized by her friends on the left. I don't really get why she vetoed those provisions, or for that matter, the tax reduction. She claims that it's due to, you know, fiscal responsibility. A lot of folks in New Mexico seem to believe that we're just one step away from oil and gas revenues falling off a cliff and not being plentiful anymore. As I told people, and all you have to do is find the simple chart that you can look at Heirs of Enchantment. You could go to the Energy Information Administration, which is the federal agency that tracks these things. The difference now is that New Mexico's production of oil particularly has grown quite rapidly in the last decade, basically quintupling in a little over a decade. And that has driven the revenue situation that we see at the state, in the state of New Mexico. So we're not, you know, a sudden price shock, price decline away from oil and gas suddenly just being not worth what it was before, not bringing in that kind of money. It's a different situation. And I don't see us becoming, as a country, significantly less reliant on oil and gas. Those still are the fuels that will carry us into the next century. And maybe it's because they want so badly to not have that reality exist. They want to see somehow electric vehicles take over, or for natural gas to no longer be used, or nuclear, or whatever it may be. They just have this inflated idea that somehow alternative energy sources are going to take over. And it's not overnight. It's not in the next decade. And I think it's really not in the next 50 to 80 years in our lifetimes.
Yeah, I remember the big brownouts in California. Was it in Texas too?
Mostly California, but that was the summer. And Texas had some in the winter. But Texas is also a heavily wind-oriented state. It's just because it's a red state doesn't mean they haven't embarked upon a lot of wind as a source of electricity down there.
With that in mind, and I think you mentioned, you know, if we're not careful, we'll start to see some of that revenue from gas and oil diminish, doing things like what's happening with this barrier around Chaco Monument may be a part of that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of barriers imposed arbitrarily by politicians here in New Mexico, or relating to New Mexico, in the last week. First and foremost, Deb Haaland, of course, she was a congresswoman from right here in Albuquerque. She is a Laguna Pueblo. A lot of the mineral rights, which includes oil and gas, owned near Chaco Canyon Monument. Those are Navajo that own those, and they're concerned about losing $200 million or thereabouts in mineral rights over the next 20 years due to the secretary's decision, Deb Haaland is now Secretary of Interior at the national level under Joe Biden, that the secretary made this decision to impose a 10-mile barrier all around that monument. That monument is big. It's what holds all of the historical and cultural artifacts that came with Chaco. So what they wanted to do, and this is Deb Haaland, Biden, our congressional delegation, which is all very much environmental left-wing Democrats, they wanted to impose a sizable barrier, and 10 miles is basically what they've been talking about. So everything the monument hits, you're talking 10 miles away from that monument and no energy being allowed in those areas. And it's a significant and large area that's now off limits. And the secretary can just do this on her own volition, making these decisions.
A unilateral decision by a government.
And it's one that was opposed by tribal interest in the Navajo Nation directly. They said no. At first, they were kind of on board with a 5-mile radius limit, but basically 10 miles was seemingly just imposed by the environmental groups and the secretary, and that's what we got.
Is Secretary Haaland giving a why?
No, Haaland is not, to my knowledge, out there. She's not really the person that the Biden administration wants out making complicated public policy explanations. I use that, say that in a very real sense, but also it's a very delicate sense. You know, the Biden administration has been notorious for looking at people to fill positions, not necessarily based on merit, but on basic gender and equity and affirmative action kinds of approaches. They have, you know, Sam Brenton, a guy that transgender cross-dressing guy who was caught stealing women's clothes out of suitcases at airports, and he was in charge of a very important nuclear program, and got in trouble recently. And of course, Biden famously said he was going to have a black woman on the Supreme Court. Clearly, he's not necessarily choosing based on talent or knowledge in a lot of these positions.
Which, of course, if there was the knowledge and the talent.
Absolutely. But you announced that months in advance, and it's clear that you are doing so because you simply want to cross off some boxes. And I'll just leave it there. But unfortunately, right, That's the reality of a lot of this administration. So who knows who's actually making the decision and what they're trying to get across.
Well, the barrier they're trying to put around Chaco, much bigger than the barrier that is mentioned in the next blog that you posted, where the land commissioner is banning new oil gas leases near New Mexico schools. And I'd be curious of the, you know, it sounds, you know, well, we want to protect our students. Okay, from what?
Right. So the land commissioner of New Mexico, it's a constitutional position. It has a, she has a finding, a fiduciary responsibility to maximize the revenues from state-held lands for the benefit of predominantly New Mexico's education system. She recently announced another unilateral decision. This is a 1-mile barrier around all schools in the state, and that new oil and gas leasing on state trust land will be eliminated within a mile of a school. Now, we could debate and discuss that and the science, and I'm not in a position at this point to say whether a mile makes sense or 2 miles or half a mile or 500 feet. I've been to plenty of places in New Mexico where humans work and live very, very close to oil and gas wells, and you don't have, to my knowledge, any science saying that that is unacceptable or something that causes real health harms. And the fact that Garcia Richard is only doing this on state trust land, and there's no impetus to do anything about existing oil and gas wells really highlights the fact that there's not really a scientific approach here.
Okay, it's so just,
sorry.
So are the existing ones within a mile grandfathered in? They can stay?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, and that's fine. I'm happy about that because ultimately it would be a different situation for the land commissioner to come in and make that kind of a dramatic policy decision. But that just undermines the case for this being based on any science. And she doesn't make the case. She just does it. She says, well, a mile is what she's going to do. And again, if it is unhealthy to live in close proximity to an oil and gas well, then we should have a science-based discussion on that and consider whether existing oil and gas wells are too close to schools or human habitation. And I've seen them pretty darn close to people's houses, specifically in the Four Corners area. So it's a debate I'm willing to have or see the information on both sides of, but the fact is that she's just virtue signaling and making arbitrary decisions. And that's what it unfortunately really boils down to.
Okay. And Paul, we really are up against a break, but since the next story is related, since it deals with oil and gas, let's quickly go through the Legislative Finance Committee's post-session fiscal review.
Yeah, and this is a treasure trove. This is like Christmas for us at the Rio Grande Foundation because the LFC really runs through the numbers on New Mexico's state budget. And one of the charts that struck my eye was that the general fund revenue, so that's what the legislature passes every year to fund basic functions of the state. There are federal programs. There's money flowing in from different funds. But over half of the general fund's revenues comes from the oil and gas industry is one of the things that the Legislative Finance Committee has said. That is dramatically increased from recent years. It's nearly $7 billion in the current fiscal year that we're talking about. So, you know, while a lot of politicians are saying, oh, we should try to get away from oil and gas, diversify our economy, in reality, New Mexico is at least as, if not more, reliant on oil and gas than it ever has been. So just, you know, something we like to point out. And the fact is that the current crop in Santa Fe, the governor on down, don't really have an idea what to do, how to diversify our economy. And it's not a surprise that with the kind of production we're seeing in the oil and gas patch, that it is growing and that we're becoming ever more dependent on it.
All right. We're in studio with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. The topics we're covering today, you'll find for the most part on the website errorsofenchantment.com, where Paul routinely posts blogs there. Including, again, much of the content, if not all the content we're covering today. We'll be back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
A little more than 5 minutes, but some stuff we want to cover with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Before the top of the hour, we mentioned earlier in today's show, Paul, you have a luncheon. The Rio Grande Foundation is hosting a luncheon in Old Town at Seasons Rotisserie and Grill. We keep saying June 14th. Listen, that's a week from yesterday. Mm-hmm. It's just around the corner, and information about that can be found at riograndefoundation.org. And in a nutshell, Paul, what would people experience by attending?
Yeah, they'll get fed, they'll get lunch, and they'll get to hear somebody who does a lot of deep thinking and analysis on how we can solve our serious homelessness issues, both here in Albuquerque and across the nation. And it doesn't necessarily mean the way that we've been trying, not just here in Albuquerque, but in other places. Simply providing housing first as a option is not necessarily the way to go. You have to be much more thoughtful about how to address this serious issue. And it's a luncheon, Seasons Rotisserie Grill in Old Town. It starts at noon, but be there at 11:45. You can find out more details at riograndefoundation.org.
And Paul, for our listeners, Cannon Air Force Base, Portales, Las Cruces, and listening anywhere at klyt.fm, is any of this going to be available afterwards?
We will do a podcast at Tipping Point, New Mexico. You can listen to Mr. Glock and his comments as well on there. So if you're outside of the Albuquerque area and you're listening, but you want to find out more, do sign up for our email list, and you will get information relating to that after he is here, when those podcast episodes and whatnot are all published. So it won't be his live remarks, but it'll be a conversation he and I have on this issue.
All right. Before the top of the hour, a couple more things to cover, including what's been in headlines nationwide, the debt ceiling and keeping from defaulting on our credit as a nation. And Paul, is everyone smiling after the agreement was made?
Oh, amazingly, love and peace have not broken out in Washington, D.C. But, you know, this is one of those issues that really demands our attention in whether we're here in New Mexico or across the country. You know, we do focus our attention at the Rio Grande Foundation on state-level issues. But the debt ceiling debate was something that, you know, needs to be focused on. Republicans were not excited about giving Joe Biden a blank check. They looked for some ways to reduce the size and scope of the federal government within the context of having a slim hold on one house of Congress, with the Democrats still in control of the Senate, and of course, Biden being a Democrat and hostile to them. They got some work requirements. They got some cancellation of funds that were appropriated to COVID-19 that were not used. They got some other, you know, things about student loans and not allowing blanket elimination of student loans as Joe Biden had wanted. So, you know, all things considered, it's a pretty decent agreement. I certainly thought, given the context, it was about as good as they could do. But the real battle that needs to be undertaken, and the battle that no one on either side of the issue, and this is a true bipartisan issue, there are more Republicans who I think would be interested in tackling entitlements, and by those I mean Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. Those programs are the ones that are completely unsustainable and really need to be focused on. And we're talking about, you know, $53 trillion in Medicare. That's for the aged, healthcare for the aged. Social Security, $23 trillion. Those programs are gradually, and by gradually I mean, you know, every 5, 10, 15 years, really starting to consume all of what our federal government does. And eventually, borrowers aren't going to be super excited about supporting the U.S. federal government and keeping it afloat. They're going to demand, you know, some kind of reforms, or they're going to take their money out of, you know, supporting those payments that the U.S. government is making. I myself would love to have the opportunity to invest my own dollars in for retirement instead of having to pay into Social Security, but it's just a mess. It's just a mess, and we need to address those programs. So, you know, while I don't want to call it much ado about nothing, the debt ceiling debate was an important discussion, and there were some worthwhile concessions received out of that. It does not solve or even come close to solving our serious financial problems as a nation.
Okay, Paul, and we're pretty much out of time, but about 30 seconds to draw people to at least go to the website, errorsofenchantment.org, to read this blog about the city council.
Errorsofenchantment.com. Actually, we haven't really commented on it yet, in the sense that we don't oppose or support. It is an effort undertaken currently at city councils to shift from what's called a strong mayor system, where Mayor Keller makes most of the administrative decisions, undertaken by city council to weaken that mayoral situation. So he's one of 10 members casting a vote, and you have a city manager. So it's actually just a switch of governments. It hasn't happened yet. It's on the agenda for the next city council meeting, so I encourage people to take a look.
All right, find the details at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, and join us again tomorrow, our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran and more on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.